Welcome to this week's episode of She Talks Tech podcast. My name is Vanessa Vallely and I'm the founder of We Are Tech Women. This week we are talking about male allyship and how it can accelerate the careers of women. We will be discussing why allyship is so important, what good looks like, and how we can all be allies to each other. In this episode of She Talks Tech, Alina Tiramisova hosts a panel on the impact of engineering in modern finance. Alina is the Vice President of Global Markets Engineering at Goldman Sachs and is joined by Holly Osborne, Vanessa Yu, and Claire Ashley, all Managing Directors at Goldman's. This discussion gives you a great insight into the industry as well as life as a woman in tech. They cover a wide range of topics from their journeys into Goldman Sachs and work-life balance. They also discuss the impact their projects have had on modern finance and the world around us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our panel today. To begin with, I would like to introduce Goldman Sachs. So what is Goldman Sachs? We connect people, capital, and ideas to solve problems for our clients. Goldman Sachs is a leading global financial firm that provides investment banking, securities, and investment management services to a substantial and diversified client base that includes corporations, financial institutions, governments, and individuals. And just to give you the scale of our GS engineering department, a third of our employees globally is engineers. And in EMEA, that's more than 3,000 people and spread across 16 cities. And our engineers are very productive. So we're responsible for more than 1.5 billion lines of code per year. And we also execute more than 2 billion transactions per year. Typically, we hire across our four key skill sets that we call software engineers, quantitative engineers, strategists, cyber specialists, and system engineers. Would you like to briefly introduce yourself?
Yes, sure. So hi, everyone. My name is Vanessa Yu. So I work in our core engineering division in the firm, and I'm responsible for a few things, including our credential and secrets management and encryption platforms. And I also look after an engineering risk management program.
Thank you, Vanessa. My name's Holly Osborne, and I work in the corporate treasury division. As part of that team, we're essentially the bank of the bank, so to speak. And in my role, I head up the global technology team that looks after liquidity, explanations, attributions, and projections.
Hi, everyone. My name's Claire Ashley. I also sit in core engineering alongside Vanessa. I work in a team called Cross-Divisional Projects and Architecture, and essentially we run all of the large, high-risk, high-impact projects for the firm that span divisions, which can have very heavy engineering focus, but sometimes can be very business or other area focused as well.
Thank you. And just to introduce myself, I joined Goldman in 2013 as a FX desk track. And since then, I worked on quoting and pricing tools across fixed income in the FX commodities and interest rate products. And currently, I lead the XDA strategist team. And our ambition is to automate pricing and workflow for interest rate flow products. I'm also co-head of an internal Women in Engineering Network recruiting pillar. And as part of the pillar, we build diversity and inclusion recruiting strategies aimed at attracting diverse technical talent to the firm. And to begin with, the first question, I guess, is can you give us the overview of your career in GS?
I have actually been at GS for over 18 years, and I joined GS through the kind of very typical internship and graduate route. And initially as a systems engineer, so I actually spent the first 10 years in very kind of technology infrastructure focused roles. I was a Unix system administrator here. I spent time on the electronic trading platforms, facing off to a fixed income business, spent some time in the storage team, market data, and then decided to move into more of a DevOps SRE type space. So, you know, looking at how we run production platforms, including the likes of our CI/CD toolchain. So, you know, the tools that allow developers to build, test, and deploy software, including building out SRE teams for some of our business divisions. And more recently, moved into the identity and access management space. So, hence the secrets management and encryption services. And I guess also, as Alina mentioned, we do have a Women in Engineering Network. So, I head that up here in the region. And I'm also a career coach for our Asian network as well.
When I first joined GS, when I applied, I actually didn't know what GS was. I was at university studying maths and computer science, and actually the Women in Engineering Network invited to take us out for dinner. So we were like, students, free food. Yeah, I'll do that. So me and my other female classmates went together and learned about GS, and I applied to the internship off the back of that. So just like Vanessa, I joined as an intern. That was in 2006. I came back in 2007 as a graduate. So it wasn't too bad. I decided I'll return. And then I've been there ever since. So I started in controllers technology as an analyst developer. So that's a developer who sits in programs. I did Java in the team. So we work very, very closely with our users. And then I stayed in Controllers for about 10 years, had my first child. I had a boy, went on maternity leave. And then when I came back, it was a really natural time for me to do something different. So I then moved to corporate treasury in 2018, was there a few years, had my second child, and now I'm back. And I'm actually back on an FWA. So I work 4 days a week. As I mentioned, I've now got a global role as well. And I'm also part of the Women in Engineering Network, and I co-run the pillar that looks after network and inclusion.
And so I had a slightly different start. I didn't study a computer science or a STEM subject, so I'm like on the naughty list, only kidding. I studied history, actually. At the time, I studied something that I really was interested in and passionate about. And because I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do, I thought it would be best for me to do that. When it came to graduation, then I was thinking about what can I do as a career. I didn't want to go into teaching, politics, civil service, some of the kind of more traditional routes if you've gone down that road. And I actually found a company that would train you up in IT as long as you got a good degree from a good university. So I spent 6 months training, learning about more of the IT service management side. So learning about Windows support, Outlook, working on a help desk. So I spent the first part of my career actually being on the help desk as a first line support person. So you would call me if your password need resetting, etc. And it'd be like, have you rebooted your computer? And then after doing that for a while, moving up in terms of team leadership, I went on to do sort of incident management roles all outside of Goldman Sachs at the time. So that was where if you had a severe outage that impacted a big system that impacted your clients for a certain business, I was responsible for bringing that incident to a close. So trying to make sure that the system was brought back up if it was a system outage, for example. And then looking, once the event had passed, looking at the root cause analysis of that item and then trying to make sure that it didn't happen again, putting in fixes or necessarily changes. And I did that for a while. And I actually decided that I really wanted to learn a little bit more about the why of why these systems were in place, why the clients were using this system. So I moved into more of a BAPM type role. I then started working at another large US investment bank and was there for sort of 4 or 5 years working as a BAPM in rates and credit, and then got the opportunity to move to Goldman Sachs and again perform a BAPM role. So I spent a lot of time on my career prior to GS because essentially once I've been here, I've stayed in the same role in the same team for the last 12 years, but I've always enjoyed it because I get to work on such a wide variety of projects.
Thank you. You've been involved in very different projects along your career. So maybe tell us about your most challenging and interesting project while in GS.
I was thinking about this question when we obviously discussed the topics, and I was thinking actually what I'm working on at the moment I'm going to talk about, because we're doing a complete rewrite of our liquidity projections platform. It's pretty interesting and it's challenging because we're doing a functional rethink and a technical rethink at the same time. So a full front to back review. How does the people who do the liquidity management want to see it, want to report it, want to manage it? What's the UX? What's the data sourcing? How do we model that? We're going to look at using cloud. We're going to use like Python and PySpark, every dimension you can think of. It's a rewrite. And so very, very challenging, but also very, very interesting.
Usually the projects that I found most interesting are when you're working on a new business or a new novel space and, you know, everybody's excited about it. There's a lot of energy and passion around it. Not all things are that way, unfortunately. But I guess one of the most interesting things I've been working on recently is in the digital asset space, where we're looking at ways that we can use DLT technology, CBDC, which is central bank digital currencies, to transact in the way that we would do for traditional markets, but trying to bring the two together. We worked on a large, really innovative bond issuance last year, and we're working on a number of new programs this year. For me, everybody's really passionate about the topic. Everybody's learning at the same time as well. So it's very interesting because we're all going through the journey, and being first in the market in some of these areas is also very, very exciting. So that's been the most interesting for me.
I've been involved in tons of different projects at GS. I thought I'll give kind of like two quite different examples, one which is much more, I guess, infrastructure platform focused, and another one that's more business aligned focused. So the first one is actually being involved in a multi-year data center build out and migration program. Now, most people nowadays just talk about the cloud as if it's this kind of virtual thing up there somewhere. You can't really put a finger on it. But at the end of the day, all of these things ties back to like physical data centers and assets, right? And so being able to be part of a project where literally we bought a plot of land and we built a data center facility from scratch, and then migrating all of our businesses and all of our compute into that facility at the end, I think that was really eye-opening. Like, I had no idea what it would take. take, how networks work, how you're going to connect up the compute, what are the business requirements that we have to kind of cater for to make that happen. Awesome project. Got to work with tons of different teams here across engineering at GS. The second example is actually helping us launch the Apple Card product in the US a few years back. So this is kind of like our first consumer credit card offering that we worked with at Apple on as a firm. I was part of that project from a site reliability engineering perspective. And I think that's the first time where I really had to think about what does it mean to run a product that needs 99s availability. It faces off to end consumers, people literally using their credit cards at till points across the US, and how that changes the way we think about managing technology platforms, the architecture as well that we need to put in place. So again, that was also very technically challenging and very exciting.
Very interesting. And as the next question, being engineers, of course, it's not always very easy to measure the impact of our projects directly to the business, because we cannot just measure the P&L impact. So during your career, would you share the insights? How do you actually measure the impact of your project, especially if it's not directly attributable to P&L?
Yes, I'll kind of jump in there. And actually, Apple Card is a very interesting example, because me as kind of in a site reliability engineer role at the time, we look at observability a lot, right? And often is platform level metrics. Part of the key job that we as engineers have to do is to try and tie back to actually the user experience. Like, what does these things mean to our end clients? And that's really where you can start doing the tie between systems and also commercial impact. For example, availability, right? So if we measure that, like, let's say if the system is not hitting the kind of availability targets, at the end of the day, that has an end user impact. Maybe they're not able to perform certain functions. Maybe they are not able to use their credit card. That will then have a kind of P&L dollar impact to our businesses. And I think understanding that end-to-end flow and how it ties back to our clients is really important for everything that we do.
I've always worked in what we call front-to-back teams. So we're sitting with our users day in, day out. What's really interesting now is you see the impact of your work with the users. And so some of my projects we've measured in hours saved for them. And you literally can see them. They're not spending time on these specific issues. Or things like reduction in support tickets. So you've improved something, and how does that change the time spent fixing bugs or dealing with issues? Risk reduction is a really big one, especially in my area. How can we try and reduce risk? And other things we've tracked, like how many spreadsheet processes are they? How can we reduce that? So although I would say a lot of my work has not been directly tied to P&L, there's many, many different measurable things you can track.
Would you agree that sometimes you need to think at the start of the project how you're actually going to measure the
success,
final success of the project, and build those metrics before you start working on the project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely that helps.
Absolutely. And I kind of have two examples that are on varying scales. So if you think about something like the LIBOR program, with LIBOR going away for non-US dollar LIBOR at the end of 2021, the whole engineering program that I was involved in globally was really about making sure that we could safely transition off LIBOR. And LIBOR underwrites trillions of dollars of swaps, for example, globally. It's a massive issue if the firm cannot now trade using the new risk-free rates. And so you measure the impact of that program by the fact that we were able to do that safely, successfully. We didn't blow up. Goldman Sachs was still in the market, right? 1st of January, 2022. And then you look at other things such as my reference digital assets. A lot of the work that we're doing there is more about being on the front foot and being innovative and being a leader in a new business. We're not necessarily going to be generating masses of money for the firm initially, but that will come in time. And so it's about actually being, from a commercial angle, being the first in that area, meaning that, okay, clients, other people are aware that Goldman Sachs are already a big player in this space. They've done a few things. And therefore, once the business in the market picks up, we already have grounding and a reputation and a standing in that area. And so you can measure your projects in that way as well.
And I will just jump in there and say that this commercial impact point is really what initially attracted me to Goldman Sachs. And it's similar to what Holly mentioned, because we actually work with our users day in, day out. I remember at the time when I was thinking about internships, do I want to go to a traditional software house where you essentially build a product, sell it to end consumers that you may never really meet? Whereas I spent 10 weeks here on internship and I was actually working with traders and salespeople on the desk. You get instant feedback from them on how you're doing. And I think that tie to that commercial impact element was really something that made me want to come back and develop a career. Yeah.
That's the best part of the job, for being very close to your end clients. Yeah. And now, being newly promoted MDs, would you share your journey to leadership?
I never aspired to be a leader. I was happy I got a job, honestly. And actually, I remember I've been here 15 years, so maybe like 12 years ago, when I was quite junior, there was a visiting lady who was an MD. And she said, who here wants to be an MD? Room full of women. One female put their arm up. And I was like, not me. Definitely not. People like me don't make MD. Obviously, that's not the case. We have great senior leaders, both in this class and above. But to me, actually, it was very natural in that you start as hands-on keyboard writing code, started to take on more responsibility. Maybe I'd own some of the architecture. Then I'd own a small team on a project. And then I ended up running a regional team. And then I did a global team of a functional stripe. And just over time, building up that skill set, flexing those leadership muscles, so to speak. Like I said, I never sought out to do it, but I've enjoyed doing it and I've kept working on the skill set because obviously there's slightly different skills you need to build as well. But what we said about working with your users and the relationships, and it's all been so positive. I've kind of ended up here and look back and going, okay, that's an interesting journey, but an enjoyable one for sure.
Yeah, I share so many sentiments. I didn't join Goldman Sachs thinking, right, I want to be a managing director at Goldman Sachs. I think that is a difference that you see across women, diverse groups in general. There is a sense of, actually, I'm just in the door. That's great. As opposed to, I'm going to shoot for that title, whether it's MD, partner, etc. And I really found it, again, as Holly alluded to, as a more organic thing. I found that actually I enjoyed managing people, mentoring people, working in a bigger team, but actually helping people with their path and their journey. And therefore, leadership to me came as a more natural thing in terms of the roles that I was playing on projects. I am a project manager. I don't have direct responsibility for all of the teams that work on my projects, but I need to get them together to deliver something. And it's through that that I guess got the feel or the knack or the taste for like leadership. But it was more about how I can help people. And that for me has been the reason why I've always taken on more responsibility or different roles, because I'm looking at how I can help people that may have come into the firm, maybe struggling to find their way or not see people like themselves. If they can identify with me, they hopefully then find their own path and I can hopefully give them advice. And one of the other things that I've done is I co-head the Black Engineers Network. And for me, again, that gave me leadership responsibilities without like an official title, for example. I found the ability to, again, help a population, help them navigate the firm, help them make connections, really was the thing that built my desire for leadership. And even when it came to getting MD, it was more about how can I help people? What can I do? And how can I improve the lot of others? So
I would give a slightly different angle to it, which is, again, I never really joined the firm thinking I'm going to make MD. As an intern, that's way too far ahead in career. But I always think about developing my career from the perspective of growth. Now, growth could be different responsibilities. And so I think over time we had taken on like managerial responsibilities here in the firm, but also how do I grow myself technically? So every couple of years I've kind of moved into a different technical domain and done something different. The development, becoming a leader, has come off the back of growth and thinking about how do you keep challenging yourself as you grow your own career. So that's kind of how I've approached it. Again, didn't set off like thinking about that's going to happen from the get-go.
How do you see the technology changing the area you work in? How does it change the business you work with?
I mean, in core engineering, we basically provide platforms and services that everyone in the firm will kind of hook into, whether it be to do with identity and access management, whether it be infrastructure, data platforms, etc. Over time, we've definitely, hopefully, made the businesses more efficient in what they need to do. Imagine a firm of our size, if everyone has to do things in a federated fashion, they build their own services and there's nothing centralized for them to hook into, that's super inefficient. I see Core as being the business unit here that provides these services to all of our end users. But I think our approach to technology has also changed over time. So for example, when I first started, we were predominantly a build in-house shop. So for a lot of proprietary technologies, whereas now we're much more open-minded about buying versus building. We use a lot of open source software. We also open source a lot of software ourselves. And so again, from a developer experience perspective, that makes it easier for people to come in and do engineering here at GS. So that's also helped the business.
I work in the corporate treasury division. It's actually quite a junior division in that there was the financial crisis in 2008. A lot of things had to be built very, very quickly to manage liquidity. You know, you build things quickly, it's not always built well, essentially. Not that liquidity management wasn't important, but a lot was done very manually. It was just like, how can we get eyes on it quicker? And so where we've been focused the last couple of years is, okay, so we've got processes in place. How do we make it faster? How do we improve our projections? And by improving projections, we could manage our funding activity. And what's really interesting is to do better at our liquidity management job, at the moment, it's all technology driven. It's getting data faster, getting data of better quality, projecting our future needs using data science or backtesting our current projections. By doing this, we can actually better manage our liquidity needs. And actually, ultimately, even having a P&L impact, because then if we can estimate our liquidity better, we don't have to pay as much interest on unused funding. So really interesting space, because I feel like technology is driving a lot of the innovation and the growth of the division.
Absolutely. To Holly's point, I caught up with a mentor today and they work in the risk division and they were talking about leveraging Snowflake for cloud, essentially. The difference it's made for them in terms of running a report that used to take 12 hours, leveraging Snowflake, that takes 20 minutes. You can't actually really quantify the difference that makes to the users. If you've got a T1 regulatory report that needs to be generated, if you've got 12 hours to run that report and then there's an issue, then everybody is scrambling because you've only got 12 more hours. So it's things like that where technology is just making life a lot more simpler, allowing us to be far more efficient, resilient in terms of the business that we do. And then it allows people, engineers, to then work on other things, on more interesting things. And that allows us to scale our business. I don't want to sound like a one-trick pony, but another example is digital assets as well, of course. Thinking about things like decentralized finance and actually removing a lot of the operational processes that we have today that are there because of the nature of the business, because we have central clearing houses and central counterparties that have to manage risks between counterparties. If you can settle trades atomically using T+0, you negate the need for a third party in that transaction, and therefore you have the operational efficiency, cost saving, and all of those things. And technology is enabling all of that. Technology is crucial, and that's why it's so big at the firm, why the organization is so big, and it's so important.
Of course, having a successful career here means that you have to often balance your life outside of work together with handling the career. And things like global pandemic just behind us, hopefully, as well as personal events you might have. How do you navigate those challenges and how do you cope with work-life balance?
I've been a mum for 20 years now, so I've had to navigate and straddle it for a very long time. I think it was harder and it's different in different places, different organizations that you've worked in. It was definitely more difficult when I was starting out in my career, because at that point, you're trying to prove yourself, you're trying to develop your skills, being able to have the flexibility that you require when you have a young child or any other outside commitment is more challenging. But I've always been quite strict and I've been able to develop that as I move forward with my career. It's always been about prioritizing the work that I do, making sure I'm focused on the right things, and then having to decide that some things will just have to wait till tomorrow because I need to go and pick up a uniform for my daughter because it's World Book Day tomorrow and she cannot be the only child without a costume tomorrow. So it's things like that. And initially that takes time. I've used my managers to say, look, I have this much to do. I need your help to help me prioritize. And then as I've become more senior, I've been able to do that myself. But it's also about also helping other people who have other commitments to do that as well. And actually being a role model to others so that they know it's okay to have a life outside of GS and you don't have to have a child to do that as well. You can have other interests that make you a more happy, well-rounded person. And it's all about making you more resilient. You'll stay longer in a firm if you think they support your all-around lifestyle, not just the 9-to-5.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a working mum as well. And like I said earlier, I work on a 4-day week. I completely agree with everything Claire said. One of the things I've had to do is hold that boundary really hard. Yes. And even before I was a mum, I used to do an evening class. And if I had to leave at 6, I just had to tell everyone that is when I'm leaving and be really strict on that. Yes. So I don't work Fridays. I actually got a call put in my calendar today and I went into the office and I was like, I don't work Fridays. And actually it's at school pickup time. So I'm like, absolutely no way. And they were fine. When you're that honest and open about it, as long as people know, it's actually not a problem at all. And as soon as you let it in and start letting people not hold your time to that value, that's when you struggle more. So I found being very strict on it is important.
I agree with everything that's been said so far. Understanding your priorities and setting really strict boundaries is absolutely key. But I would also say sometimes all it takes is certain little tricks to help manage this. For example, manage a global team. From a calendar perspective, I make sure I have all my Asia calls on certain mornings and then I stay late perhaps for certain like US calls on certain days. Let's not try and burn the candle at both ends of the day. So just being also a little bit more thoughtful and organized about how you manage your day-to-day often really helps with the work-life balance aspects as well. But yeah, definitely the boundary is really, really important.
Great. And I'm sure that's relevant not just for women, but for men as well. Thank you very much. It was really, really nice to hear about your journey and your insights in your career here in GS. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Alina, Holly, Vanessa, and Claire for being my guests on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about our wonderful panelists, you can find them all on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe, rate the podcast, and give it that all-important 5-star review. And keep listening every Wednesday morning for a new episode of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women.